I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am thrilled, as always, to be here with you. So thank you for joining me here on Chasing Justice. So with all of the things going on, we need to try and catch up. But I think the first thing I wanted to talk about is because I have a connection to the law enforcement community, having spent so many years in law enforcement myself, that I wanted to talk about the situation going on with bail reform. And it's New York is close to me here, and I see a lot of the problems that they're having in New York because of bail reform. So let's break that down a little bit, talk about what it is, what it isn't, why it's important, and some of the problems that we're having. So I think that what we have seen is President Trump did an initiative last year to work on bail reform. Now, I am in agreement with bail reform. I have seen over the course of my police career the realities of people who don't have cash readily available to them, and they have relatively minor nonviolent charges, sometimes even motor vehicle charges. Some states will arrest you and send you to jail for a motor vehicle charge. Now, I'm not talking about drunk driving, DWI, DUI, whatever they call it in your state. I'm talking about an unlicensed or an unregistered car. You know, you might get arrested for that. If you have a suspended driver's license, you might get arrested for that. And when we look at that, we say, are those bad things? Yes. You know, if you're driving around with a suspended driver's license, it's probably because, you know, you had some motor vehicle, you know, problems. You drove too fast. You went through red lights. You were an unsafe driver. And you were adjudicated as such, and your license was suspended. That's your punishment. You're going to pay a fine, and you have to, you know, take cabs, get rides, or whatever. You can't drive a car for whatever period of time they assign to you. Now, I saw many, many, many instances when I would stop hardworking, decent people who had some minor problems, you know, whatever it was, or they got involved in something, you know, a minor shoplifting, which is still bad. I'm not saying none of this is bad. I'm saying over the course of life, you get some wisdom and you start to look at things. And I saw that a lot of these people, if they came from a family that had resources, that had money, and they got in trouble, they would get arrested, go to the police station. Horrible thing to get arrested, not fun. You know, their picture taken, whatever. And then they would make a phone call, and mom, dad, spouse, friend, somebody would come down and post the $500 or $1,000 cash, or get a bondsman for 10% of that, because that's what the bondsmen do. You give them 10% of the warrant amount or the bail amount, and they give you a bond, and then you get to go home. And what I saw, though, was that there is a whole other group of people, you know, lots and lots of people who do not have access to $300, $400, $500 with a phone call or in their bank account. And like I said, these were for relatively minor types of things. But then this person might spend a week or two or longer in the county jail for a minor motor vehicle violation or for a parking warrant that they didn't have money to pay their, you know, their parking warrant, or some minor classified as a criminal, you know, nonviolent activity. Now, not condoning any of that. Let's be clear about that. But the reality is, not that it's unfair. And I don't know. This is what I'm trying to work through. The reality is that some people have resources and some don't. And they both do the same thing. And one ends up in jail for a month before they're, you know, released by the judge before their trial, or they have their trial, or they plead guilty, or they whatever. And the other person gets to go home that day. So I see where people could say, hey, this isn't fair. We have to make this more equitable to everybody. You know, sure, we're going to hold people to account, but we're not going to send people to jail for these relatively minor things because they don't have access to $500 cash. There was a time in my life I did not have access to $500 cash. I would have been sitting in a county jail if I got in trouble. You know, so I get that. Let's start there. Now, when you start talking about other types of things, other crimes that people do that are more in the line of a violent crime, okay, some kind of an assault, some kind of an attack, on somebody else, possession of a weapon, more serious things. Now we are seeing that proponents of bail reform are using the race card to jump in and say, well, this isn't fair because minorities go to jail for these things and at a greater rate than the other people do, and that's not fair, therefore we have to do away with the bail. Now, we can make that argument, and I think probably for the same reasons. If a guy with resources who is a non-minority gets stopped because he got into a fist fight, punched somebody in the face, and his bail might be $2,000, he can get that $2,000 and go home. And it was a bar fight. He shouldn't have did it, but he did it, and he gets to go home. And someone else, maybe somebody in our minority community, doesn't have that money, then they go to jail. So again, we have to look at that and say, is that fair? Is it not fair? Now, I don't have the specific statistics in front of me of which communities are more victimized by this inequity. But you have to say that the proponents say that it's our minority communities, and we have to look at that. We have to look and see if that's really true. Is there any systemic racism in there? Now, I don't think that it's systemic racism in the fact that people say, well, we want the minority people to go to jail, so we'll keep it like that. I think it's an equity. It's an economic reality. Whether you're a poor white guy or you're a poor black guy, if you get in trouble for something and you don't have bail money, you're going to jail. A richer guy or a richer girl with more resources is going to be able to get themselves out, right? So the whole idea of bail, what's the purpose of bail? Bail is to ensure you have some skin in the game, so to speak. All right, you have some interest in coming to court and having your day in court. Now, I got to tell you, any cop will tell you, we have people that have warrants constantly because they get arrested. They have to post a $300-$400 bail. Takes them a couple of days to raise the money, or they get in front of a judge and a judge reviews it and says, you know what, I'm going to drop your bail and I'll send you home. You did 3 days in a county jail for stealing, you know, a pack of gum or something. You'll come to trial next month. And of course, they don't show up for trial because they have no interest in going to trial. So therefore, the judge will issue a warrant for failure to appear. Now, that warrant can be in the system for months, days, or years until they get stopped again somewhere along the line in their life, a traffic stop or a suspicious person stop, or they get involved in something else, they get arrested, and you find these other warrants. Now they got the charge that they were arrested for, plus the warrant, and now their bail might be $2,000 or $5,000. Now they're definitely going to sit in jail unless they have resources. So this is where our system is meant for you to have an interest in that system by you posted this bail. If you don't show up for court, you forfeit that bail, right? So the court gets to then keep that $300 or $400 you posted, and they issue a warrant for you, and when you're arrested, you get a new bail. You don't get that other money back. So this is more of an economic problem, I think, than simply a racial problem. I think it's more prevalent in our bigger cities because we just see more and more people getting arrested there. All right, so that's the first thing. What's going on now in places like New York is that they've taken that to the furthest extreme of common sense. They're letting violent people back out under this premises that it's not fair. So therefore, you're seeing people getting arrested 3 and 4 times in the same week for sexually touching somebody, for punching somebody, for assaulting somebody, for committing other crimes that are more serious, burglary. But they're letting them out time and time and time again, and they're going back and committing more crimes. So I have a formula that I want to discuss because I'm trying to figure out how to put this into an article to try and define this a little bit better for us based on my experience and what I know about human nature. But before we do that, I want to look at, you know, there's a judge in Long Island, all right? There's a judge in Long Island who knows the law, and the law says you got to release people with no bail based on this list of charges. And they're outrageous, some of the charges. But this judge saw the same guy a couple times in a couple of weeks. Like, he got arrested, released, rearrested, brought back in, rearrested, released. And this judge says, I don't care what the law says. You're going to jail on bail. I'm setting bail on you because you're a danger to the community. Well, when the court system found out that what this judge did, the court system attacked the judge and said, you can't do that, you're wrong, you're going to be in contempt. There's a movement to remove the judge from the bench because he doesn't want to do the right thing, because he's, you know, all these names they want to call him. In the meantime, his real life on the ground experience is seeing a criminal rearrested time and time again, and committing more crimes, victimizing more people. And the judge says, this is ridiculous. There's nothing to hold this man to account. Therefore, he's going to continue victimizing people. I am not going to abide by that. Now, let me be clear about the record. If the law says you have to let them go, then you have to let them go. Because we are a nation of the rule of law, right? That's what we follow. What you do is you have to go to the politicians and demand that they change that law. So I'm going to say they started out with a good idea. Bail reform is a good idea. We need to relook at this system. We need to look at these kind of things. Do we really want to arrest people with small amounts of marijuana and put them in jail for 3 months when we know marijuana is going to be legal nationwide within a couple of years? So what are we doing there? Now, I'm not talking about the drug dealer, the guy that's got 3 pounds and he's whacking it up and selling it. I'm not talking about that guy. I'm talking about the guy's running around with 3 joints in his pocket and he gets stopped or pulled over and they find a joint. They lock him up. He can't post his $3,000 bail for his drug charge and away he goes. I think we need to have this conversation as a country. You know, let's reevaluate what we're doing here. All right. Not because it's easy to do. It's necessary to do. So here's my theory. And I'm going to use very broad-based numbers so that you can follow along with the theory. If we say in any given community across our country, everybody, we're all in this community together, the people of the United States, there are 20% of us, of American citizens, who are going to commit crimes that are serious and violent. 20%. Now, in most instances, what happens is our police are out there very aggressively protecting and serving their communities, right? So they're looking for crime. They're not looking for people. No matter what people say, they're not targeting specific groups of people. Hey, let's go after these people or let's go after those people. They're targeting the crime where the crime is, right? So now we have to all understand that and recognize that up front. Police target crime. They do not target people. And for all you naysayers out there, those on the left who I know you're listening, are there examples of a cop doing the wrong thing? Of course there are. Ask any cop out there and they will tell you that, of course, that's the truth. There are some rogue cops that do the wrong thing. But out of 650,000 cops, it is a handful of cops who do the wrong thing. The great overwhelming majority of all the law enforcement men and women out there do the right thing every day. They try to do the right thing. They work very hard to do the right thing. And it's a difficult job. It's not easy. So let's go back to my theory now. So there's 20% of all of us in the whole country. Doesn't matter where you're from, your race, or your creed, none of that. It's 20% of our population engages in crime that could be considered dangerous to you and me and violent. Our police are very aggressively going out there and they are attacking crime. Wherever they find the crime, they're looking for the crime. They attack and they arrest, say, 15% of the 20% of people who are committing these violent crimes. That 15% now gets a bail put on them, which a lot of times they can't make, and now they're sitting in jail. That leaves 5% of the bad guys and bad girls committing real serious crime still out on the street. Now our police are attacking that 5% that are committing that serious crime. And of course, the crime statistic numbers go way down. Crime goes way down because that other 15% of people committing crime are in jail. Either convicted and doing prison time, convicted and doing county jail time, or sitting in jail awaiting their trial. They're not out re-victimizing people. So what happens is that turnover is constant because eventually that 15% that's in jail, for whatever reason, they get out. And now they're back into the mainstream of people. But in the meantime, the police have now arrested lots of members of that 5%. That were still out on the street. So the number continues to flow in about that direction. 20% of people committing most of the crimes, 15% get arrested, 5% are out there in the street re-victimizing, and because you only have 5%, the number goes down. Makes common sense, right? But when you turn around and say, we are no longer going to put out of that 20%, we arrest 15, 12% of those people we're going to let back out on the street. We're only going to hold on to 3 of the most violent groups of people, 3% of the most violent groups of people of our group. The rest, 12%, are going to go back on the street. Now, I hope you follow me here, that 5% constant that we didn't get to, and 12% that's constantly released, now you have 17% of our population, of our group, our American family, that commit crime. 17% of them are out there on the street, constantly committing crime, re-victimizing people, committing new crimes all the time, and our police are attacking them. But as soon as they arrest them, they get put back out on the street, and then they go back and commit more crime. So of course, the crime statistic numbers are going to start to rise. The number of crimes are going to start to rise because you have available criminals to do the crimes. It's only common sense. If you're going to take people who committed crime and keep letting them go, and they are people who have a criminal lifestyle, and lots of people do, they're going to go out and commit crime. And then that number is going to go up. And that's the number that we're seeing in many of these places where they've instituted this overall bail reform that doesn't matter. Unless you committed murder, you're not going to jail. We're going to let you go. So when you add to that, and the final part of that puzzle, is that every day across our country, there are many because remember that 20% of our population that commits the crime, as they age in now, as they age into that group and they start committing crime, now you got more people committing crime and the number goes up exponentially and you start to have an out-of-control crime wave, which is what we're starting to see in some of these cities that have really instituted this very far-left progressive bail reform. And that's where it's going to be dangerous. It's going to be dangerous for all of us because catching back up to that is going to require more resources, more law enforcement officers, a change in the laws, because we have to straighten out this bail reform. You know, we have to look at that list and go, okay, non-violent crimes with simple things that people do. You know, okay, people are going to commit petty thefts. They're going to do that. Maybe they should be held to court. If you don't go to court one time, you have an FTA, a failure to appear, then the next time you will have a bail. You know what I mean? We have to tighten it up a little bit so that it works to not only be equitable for everybody in our big American family, but it also has to be fair to the rest of the people out here who are not committing crimes, to the victims. See, we turn our system around and we are very, very worried about the criminal. And in reality, that is our system, isn't it? You know, you're innocent until proven guilty. You get every benefit of the doubt. You get an attorney to fight the charge. We go through crazy things. Go to a court sometime and sit down and watch the things that happen in a court. I've talked about them before, where you would be shocked at the things that go on. Like, we ignore evidence because it portrays the person who's been charged in a really bad light. We don't let juries see the crime scene photos because they will shock the conscience of the jury, and of course they'll find the person guilty. So we cut out all this. Judges will tell investigating officers, you are not to say certain things on the stand, even if they're evidence in the case. It's part of the case. You are not to mention you've ever met this defendant before. You are not to mention you've ever arrested them before, because that would maybe make the jury think this person's a criminal and be more prone to find them guilty and put them in jail. Now, we can all recoil at that kind of an idea because we say, wait a minute, don't we want the truth to come out and bad people, no matter who they are, should go to jail so the rest of us can be safe? But at the same time, what if you were charged with something? Wouldn't you want every opportunity to defend yourself and every opportunity to make your case for your freedom, basically? So I get this. It's crime and punishment has been with the human race for a very, very long time. It's been very draconian at times. It's been very strict, and other times it gets very loose. When it gets loose and it loosens up and society says, wait a minute, what are we doing here? We got to let everybody out and people don't mean it and, you know, there's all kinds of things that could go on. The rest of us are in danger when that happens, all right? Because criminals don't really care about you. They will rob you. They will rape you. If they pull a weapon on you and they get nervous, they might accidentally shoot you, stab you, or kill you, or somebody in your family. So we have to come to some way to figure out this bail reform so that it's fair and equitable to everybody in our big American family, but that it also recognizes human nature. People are going to commit crimes. We need to be protected from them. That's why we have the police. All right, so that's my first thoughts here today on Chasing Justice. We'll be back in a minute with round two.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and today we're looking at a little bit of crime and punishment stuff here in the search of justice, right? That's the whole premise of our show here, justice in all its different forms. One of the things I think we need to look at is I was talking about New York earlier and the bail reform and what's going on there. There's a mayor in New York, de Blasio, who is a very, very far left, progressive, radical, left-wing kind of guy. That's what he is. He has taken the city that he inherited from the Rudy Giuliani years and the Michael Bloomberg years, where the police went out and enforced the law very, very strictly. They went out and made New York City one of the most safest big cities in the world. You could walk down the streets all over the place with your family. You could enjoy the city. Everyone in neighborhoods that were plagued with crime could live in their own neighborhood without being plagued with crime. It was good, really, for everybody. Now, some of the tactics that they used, people don't like because it puts bad guys and bad girls under the scrutiny of law enforcement. You can argue about the tactics, whether they worked or they didn't. You know, one of the big ones, Michael Bloomberg, is now running for president, and he's running around on an apology tour, much like another famous left-wing liberal guy, Obama, did when he ran around the world apologizing for America. Michael Bloomberg is now running around apologizing for keeping the people of New York City safe in every community of the city. He's apologizing for what he did because he did a thing, he allowed the police to do a thing called stop and frisk. Now, we've talked about stop and frisk. Now, stop and frisk is a policy that says to police officers, if you see someone acting suspiciously, you see someone doing something that appears to be the beginning of a crime or maybe the flight from a crime, whatever, and you stop people, you will frisk them, and if you find a weapon, you arrest them. Now, it seems common sense, right? Okay, now, I go to New York City a lot. I go to dinner, I walk up and down, I go to the bars, I have a cigar, I'm with my friends, my family. I see lots of police officers. I'm not engaging in suspicious behavior. But if I was, say I was hanging around the corner of a building, and I kept peering around the corner of the building where people are walking by, and the cops saw me, you know what they would do? They would say, that guy's in a suit and tie, but he keeps looking around the corner. Looks like he's up to no good. They'd come over, and they would talk to me. And if I did and said certain things, looked like maybe I was hiding a weapon or shielding my body from them seeing that maybe I had something in my pocket, they would probably put me up against the wall and frisk me for a couple of reasons. Number one, for their own safety. And number two, because it seemed like I might have had a weapon. And if they found a weapon, get arrested, right? Now, of course, for my law enforcement friends that are out there, we know we're not talking about just walking up, grabbing people. Hey, come here, I'm going to search you because you're on the street. That's improper. I wouldn't want that happen to me or anybody I know. So there's a lot of case law that governs what the police officers can do. But a lot of times this stop and frisk recovered lots and lots of illegal guns. Now, what happened with those illegal guns? They were used in robberies. They were used in sexual assaults. They were used in murders of lots and lots of people from all the communities of New York. Now, getting those guns off the street, yes, the people that had them got arrested and faced jail time. And that's very difficult, but you shouldn't be walking around with an illegal gun committing crime. But we kind of lost sight of that. We kind of said, wait a minute, it's worse that you stop people and find these weapons and lock them up. That's not fair. Now, statistically, I guess if you looked, a lot of the areas where this stop and frisk went on was, again, the areas where the crime was. All right, they weren't going uptown to Midtown and stopping people in three-piece suits. I get that. But the same crime wasn't going on there. But what we've done is, like most of liberalism, is that we put our blinders on and we say, hey, disregard statistics. Disregard that. It's got to be the same everywhere or you can't do it. And I understand. I wouldn't want my sons or me or my daughter to get stopped and frisked for no reason. I would not want it. I wouldn't permit it. As a police commander, I wouldn't permit it. But if there is reasons, if there's articulable suspicion that somebody has a weapon or is about to commit a crime, I would say stop everybody. Every one of them guys in a three-piece suit. Stop every one of them and search them, because we want to keep everybody safe. So again, could there be perceptions that things were not right? There could be. Was there cases where, hey, officers are working in areas where there's really a lot of crime and they overdid it, that they did stop a lot of people that weren't doing anything because they thought they were suspicious? I guess, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't there on every stop, were you? All right, but people complained about it. And like everything, we are responsive in America. If someone says they've been aggrieved, we have to look at their grievance and see if it's true or not. But the reality is this. Stop and frisk was an effective tool in getting guns off the street and saved lots of lives. Lots of lives of people who would have been victimized, who would have been murdered, who would have been killed. Stray bullets hitting children sitting on their porch playing, or playing out in the street or in their bedroom. A lot of that slowed down and dissipated because the cops were out there getting these guns off the street. Now, we change administrations, we change philosophy, and we have Mayor de Blasio, who is this very far-left progressive and is anti-police. He thinks the cops are bad, he thinks the cops are racist, he thinks the cops are only out to get certain groups of people, and he is going to stop them from doing that. Never mind the truth, never mind the statistics, never mind the poor people in those neighborhoods who are being victimized, and they deserve police protection as much as everybody else in that city. Whether you live in, you know, Midtown in one of the big buildings, or you live in one of the poorer neighborhoods in the city, every single person deserves police protection and should live in safety. Nobody should be afraid that their kid's going to go out the door and get killed, robbed, or raped. That's just wrong. So we have to protect everybody. But what happened was Bloomberg did this stop and frisk. And it was successful in keeping people safe, but other people felt that it was racially targeting communities, and therefore we can't do it. Okay, think about that for a minute. You feel that you're being targeted, and I understand that. I've met people who said they felt targeted, and I wouldn't want to be targeted. So they said they felt targeted, and we stopped doing that procedure so that they will not feel targeted. And then the crime goes up in their neighborhood, and they end up getting killed, or somebody in their family gets killed. How does that work out? Don't we have to figure this out? Isn't it something as a giant community, all of us? Shouldn't we all get together and figure out how are we going to do this? Because every single person deserves to be safe, should be able to walk the street of their city without having some kind of criminal action take place on them. And at the same time, nobody deserves to be targeted simply because of ridiculous reasons like somebody's race. You don't target anybody for their race. That is absolutely wrong. And as a police commander, I would hold my cops accountable if they were doing that. So I think we covered that topic pretty well. The Sergeants Benevolent Association, though, they came out, and New York recently had a couple of incidences where a man came and he tried to kill a police officer in a police car, got away, and a few hours later he showed up at the precinct house, walked in the door, and there's video of this out there, and he started shooting in the precinct house. He only stopped when he ran out of bullets, and then the cops were standing there with guns, and he laid down on the ground. He hit one lieutenant, he shot him, I think he grazed his face or his neck, didn't kill anybody, thank God. But this guy is, out there doing these kind of things. This could have been anybody. This could have been you going to see a play. You know, you could have been shot by this guy. If he's willing to shoot a cop, he'll shoot anybody. So the Sergeants Benevolent Association feels that the police are being targeted, and we see this more and more, don't we? That it's undeniable that there's anti-police feelings all across this country now, especially in some of our bigger cities. They have rallies. You know, Antifa comes in. They don't want the police anymore. They want to, you know, we want to get rid of ICE. We hear these left-wing progressive leaders in all of these cities. You know, we're not going to work with ICE. We should disband ICE. We don't want them in here. We want our police to stop, you know, policing so aggressively. We want our police to, you know, be nice people in the street. And what happens there? They're not bad things. It's not bad things to have your cops do the right things and be friendly with everybody. But when you stop policing and you stop going after people who are committing the crime, you know, that 20% we talked about before, when you stop aggressively going after them, they don't just say, well, you know what? The cops are being nicer today, so I don't think I'll rob that old lady. you know what? I don't think I'll go in and rob that store today. You know, I won't shoot that guy that I have a beef with today because the cops are being nicer to me. No, the reality is people become emboldened. This is human nature. Well, the cops aren't going to enforce anything anymore, so you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go shoot that guy I have a problem with. I'm going to go rape that girl that I see on the corner. This is human nature. We have to take this into effect if we're going to properly police our communities. And when I say police our communities, I mean all of us, not just the cops. We have to, as a community, come together with our political leaders, our religious leaders, get together and decide, what do we want? How do we want to live in our community? Do we want safety? Or do we want people running free and letting them do whatever because then we all feel better about it? You know, do we want cops arresting people? Nobody likes to get arrested. Who wants to get arrested? Nobody. When we let people resist, when the police say you are under arrest, and people say, I don't want to be under arrest, and they fight with our police officers, and then we want to blame the cops when they use force to overcome that person who's resisting, what happens is the cops are going to start backing down. They're going to say, you know what? I don't need to get arrested myself for doing my job. I don't need to get in trouble. I don't need to get demoted. I don't need to get fined. I don't need any of this. So you know what? I'm not going to pay attention to the crime areas. I'm going to let everybody commit whatever crime they want, and I'll go take the report. Do you think that that makes you safer or less safe when the police take that kind of an attitude? That's right. Whoever out there is saying it makes you less safe, you're absolutely correct, because our police then are not enforcing the law and aggressively protecting all of the people who deserve to be protected. All right, so we have the argument that maybe we need to train our police a little differently, that we need to add some things into their training about community relations. I think so. We can't say that they should be the stopgap for every bad thing that goes on in a community. They can't be the counselor and the friend and the crime, but they could certainly be more compassionate to people. They could certainly look at things more. You know, my attitudes, you've heard my attitudes, they've changed over the years. The way I look at bail reform, I think we can all do those kind of things. But we have to face the fact that that 20% of our society that will commit crime, right, in all of our neighborhoods, every one of us is prone to this. Every neighborhood, you can go to any neighborhood, there's burglaries, there's crime, maybe less of it than in other neighborhoods, but there's still crime and burglary and assaults and murder and all that kind of stuff. That's human nature to commit those crimes. So how are we going to deal with that? Are we turn a blind eye to it? Do we pretend it doesn't exist? Do we want our cops to ignore it and just take the report of your murder? Is that what we want to do? We need to come together on this as a people and figure out how to move forward. And that would be real justice, right? I think it's important. Now, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I will because I think it adds to the conversation. Understanding, you know, you've heard me say many times that when we talk to each other, when we communicate, human beings, when we talk to each other, we don't listen to understand, we listen to respond. And I think this is absolutely true. I found this to be true in every relationship I've ever had at different times. There's people who, you know, you get upset with somebody. You're not listening to what they're saying. Now you're listening to argue. You want to make your point. And I think that happens on a bigger scale for people. My daughter, who's a brilliant young woman, she says to me, she's taking some classes in school on social justice. And I want to hear about this. I want to see what the new thinking is going on out there. What are they teaching our kids? And she tells me that, you know, one of the things they're finding is that kids that grow up in crime-ridden areas, kids that grow up in great poverty, they are suffering a form of PTSD. Now, I didn't study this. I don't know it to be true, but this is what they're teaching kids in college about crime areas, why people continue to be criminals, why they continue to get in trouble and have them get themselves locked up and all that, is because they're suffering a form of PTSD from the negative effects of their lifestyle being grinding poor. I'm not grinding poor. If you're listening to me, you're probably not grinding poor. What would I do if I was? I don't know. Maybe I would do some of those things. You know, would I steal bread and milk to feed my kids? Would you steal bread and milk to feed your kids? You might, right? Or what? Your choice is what? Let your kids go hungry? What are they going to do? Eat the doorknobs? No. So you might do something you wouldn't think would be appropriate. Now, would you go out and rape and rob? I don't know if we would do that. But you might go steal bread and milk if you had to feed your kids. So her point is, and this is the point of the class, is that because some young people are so affected by their early years and these negative influences on their lives, that they're suffering a PTSD, and they engage in criminal behavior because it is inherent in that economic situation that they're in that situation where everything is so difficult and they're suffering that PTSD. I don't know. I'd like to get a psychologist and bring them in here and talk to them about that. Because do we have to take that into account? I think we do. And I think that's the point. And I had to thank my daughter for bringing that up because we need to look at that. If people are damaged, right? We do in our society give people a little bit of leeway if there's a reason, a legitimate reason for what they do, right? Isn't that what you do and go in front of the judge? Judge says, why'd you run that red light? Well, Your Honor, my wife was giving birth in the back seat and she was having a hard time, so I went through the light so I could get to the hospital. Is it still wrong to go through the light? Yes, it is. Is it understandable you would go through the light under that traumatic situation? Now, that's a very simple one to understand, right? Woman's in the back giving birth. She's screaming. She's in great pain. You don't know what to do. You're not a doctor. You're going to slow down and stop at that light? No, you're going to keep on going to that hospital. So we do make that, and the judge might say, okay, you did go through it, but I'm going to give you a break on this one because I understand the reason. So if this is one of the underlining reasons for crime in our society, then I think we do need to look at it. Now, I have a lot of brilliant people in my family. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And my wife and I were talking about it, and Kathleen is brilliant. And she says, yes, we do need to take this stuff into consideration. But there comes a point when that person becomes violent that we can take that into consideration to give them help, but we don't negate the fact that they need to be kept away from us until they can be rehabilitated because they could be dangerous to everybody. So again, these are all parts of this criminal justice puzzle that we need to figure out. We can't think about things like we did back in the day. We have to look at realities, at the changes in our society. We have to look at, we've been enlightened, and I don't like that word. That sounds very left-wing and progressive to me, but we have been enlightened. Sometimes you got to write. Sometimes stop clock is right twice a day. And we have been enlightened in some things. And is this relook at criminal justice? Is this relook at social justice situations? Are there things in there that we can pull out and say, you know what? Maybe we didn't look at that close enough. What can we do before people get to that point? What kind of outreach can we have for kids that might be prone to crime in any community, right? What can happen when we have kids that are under those kind of circumstances that could lead to criminal activity? How do we step in and maybe try and help them? Because it would be much better to step in and help a kid when they're suffering that way than to arrest them later on and put them in jail. That's improper if we can find a way to do it without putting people in jail, right? It's good for all of us. You know, one of the things I teach all the time is, you know, student threat assessments. It's basically the same concept. If you can pick out the kids that you think are prone to potentially be a school shooter and you can intervene before they do it, find out what the problem is, why they're feeling this way, and help guide them away from that, you saved not only their life, but you saved all the life of the innocent kids they would have killed in their school. Right? So we know active shooters take place everywhere. So wouldn't it make sense? So I think there's a seed of truth in all of this that I think we do need to look at again as a group, as a giant American family, to see what we can do to help all of us not suffer from crime or be victimized and have better lives for everybody. You know, that's where Lieutenant Joe wants us to go. So we'll be back in a minute with round three. It's flying by today, isn't it? See you in a minute.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right then, in my Matthew McConaughey, so all right, all right, all right, we are back. Chasing Justice here. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe. Thank you for joining me each and every weekday. You know, I do hear from a lot of you. I'm out there on Twitter. I would like you to follow, and I will follow you back. It's at Pangaro Global. At Pangaro Global. It'd be great to hear from you. You can tweet me your ideas, give me your opinions, tell me what you think of the shows. We can talk about things. I get on there a lot on Twitter, and I like to see a lot of different opinions and hear what's going on out there. So at Pangaro Global. And remember, here on Chasing Justice, we're on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You should listen to lots of the shows on this network. Matter of fact, I would put the app on your phone, listen to the podcast, because all Chasing Justice shows are on podcasts, multiple networks. Go to the platform, AmericaOutLoud.com. You'll see a lot of my articles there, a lot of other great people that write tremendous things. It's a great place for information and exchange of ideas. I think you'll really like it. So that's my advice. Go check out Chasing Justice on the podcast, and go to the AmericaOutLoud.com network platform and read the articles, and you can pick up all the shows and everything there. All right, so there we go. Now, what Chasing Justice show would be complete without a little review of the political mess and nightmare we are suffering in the United States today? So we have seen the impeachment trial is over, right? We think that's a good thing. It was a scam. There was clearly a scam. We see the arguments that are going back and forth now, saying, well, he's impeached forever. Our friends on the left, they want to make sure everybody knows he's impeached forever. We got him. He's an impeached president. And I say, you know, I thought that would bother me, but in reality, it doesn't, because you know what? I know it was an illegitimate impeachment. And I say that very confidently, having seen the evidence, having seen how they put this together, having seen the inquiry they did. Now, you've heard this everywhere you listen to talk radio, I'm sure, is that they only allowed certain witnesses. President Trump's and the Republicans were not allowed to call any witnesses in the inquiry. They weren't allowed to question certain areas of questioning. They weren't allowed to go there. Adam Schiff jumped in and stopped witnesses from answering because he didn't want certain things on the record. They had hidden meetings in basements where only the Democrats were allowed, so they could draw out of witnesses and make up what they wanted to. You know, when you look at that, along with the Mueller probe and the fake Russia narrative that's gone on, when you see that the Steele dossier that was used to get these FISA warrants to listen in on the Trump campaign, and that's what it was. You can deny it all you want, but that's what it was. You know, Trump said he was being spied on, and everybody, oh, you're nuts. Nobody would spy on. It turns out, guess what? He was being spied on, right? When we look at all of that that's gone on, it is such an injustice. And as far as I can see, I have to agree with other people that have said it out there. This is the biggest scandal our country has ever had. And the fact that the media refuses to look at it shows you two things. First of all, the power of the media, that they can ignore something so devastating to our country. Without looking at it honestly, it shows how corrupt they have become now. And when we don't have a good media, an honest media to look at things, no matter what side of the aisle does something, how do you ever trust anything they ever say? Because you know they're so biased. You know that they're only going to talk about things that the editors and the people that own the newspapers and the TV stations want to talk about. They're not going to say, well, let's look into this. When the president of the United States says he was spied on, instead of laughing at him because you don't think the Democrats would ever do a thing like that, you're just a liar because we hate you. Instead of looking at that, they should have said, all right, you four guys and girls, you're assigned to go find out if there was any spying on the president. Could you imagine if the power of the United States government by an opposing party was actually used to spy on another campaign? Can you imagine if they used the levers of power to do a thing like that? Well, that would be the biggest scandal in American history. Go out there and get that story. Now, that's what a real editor would do. That's what a real producer of a show would do. The real owner of these stations would say, I want to know the truth. Can you imagine if this really happened? This would be the biggest thing we would ever be able to report on in our lives. But instead, they didn't do that. They saw the evidence. They probably said, boy, it kind of looks like he was spied on, but we're not going to say that because that hurts our side. And therefore, you have a corrupt media. You have a corrupt media that serves no one but themselves. And when the president calls them fake news, who wants to hear that you have fake news? But do any of you believe anything you hear on the news anymore? I don't. You know, you hear something and you say, boy, that sounds like that could be bad. But you know what? I don't really believe it. I think they're probably making it up. Why? Because they make it up. How many times have these newspapers been caught making up stories, going with unsourced stories, going with one source who is a political connection hidden somewhere in the deep swamp who says, hey, this is what I heard. Trump did this. And then they run with that story as though it's absolutely fact instead of investigating it. Now, I don't want to spend my whole time here beating up on the media. We all know now they are completely corrupt. And you really can't believe them. You have to listen to everything you hear as though it's just another group of people lying to you for a purpose. And their purpose is to change your point of view or make you see things their way as opposed to investigating. And that's what they should be doing. So I was thinking, what do you think about the Chasing Justice newspaper? Of course, we would call it something different than that. Maybe we would call it the America Out Loud newspaper. Right? I think that might be good. I should talk to Malcolm about that and see if we want to start the America Out Loud newspaper and have everybody out there subscribe. And we would really investigate. Lieutenant Joe would lead the way investigating with, I would get Lieutenant Randy, get him on board, and we would investigate all of this nonsense and tell the truth. Whichever way it goes, I'll tell you the truth. Because I told you that all along, right? If Trump had done something wrong, if he had done something to compromise his office, if he had done something inappropriate that endangered me and my family, I'd be the first one to jump up and down and say, impeach him. Because no president should wield power inappropriately. But in this case, all the things that they said he did. They made it all up. They made the whole thing up. So you got the Steele dossier from Hillary. She was behind this, right? You got the FBI Comey who lied about the FISA warrant. You got a Mueller report that came out with basically nothing, but instead of closing it out, well, I don't know if he colluded. I don't know what he did. He didn't know collusion, but maybe he obstructed. I don't know. They make up charges that are not impeachable. They go after him and impeach him, even in face of the fact that there is no evidence. They impeach the president of the United States. That's why when they say, he's impeached forever, it really doesn't mean anything. Because, you know, you hope that down the road, that asterisk would be on there and say, yeah, it was a one-sided, biased political action is what it was. It was not a real impeachment in the terms of, boy, somebody did something wrong and they got caught, right? That would be a real impeachment. This was a political impeachment, which why people are not looking at that story and going with that story to say, this is totally inappropriate. Could you imagine if half the government faked up charges and just wanted to impeach somebody because they didn't like them, because they wanted to regain political power? Could you imagine if somebody did that? That would be the biggest scandal since the Mueller report. And that would be the biggest scandal since the Russian hoax. Boy, a lot of big scandals going on here, right? In the last couple of years. Because we are so divided in our country, in our ideology. We used to all be going down the same river, just in different boats. We would get to the end of the river in a different way. We don't have that anymore. I've said this many times. I think it's a good analogy. We are not only in different boats. We're on different rivers. We have one party in our country that is being taken over by people who believe in socialism. Now, I know a lot of my friends on the left that are traditional Democrats and maybe a little more liberal. They don't think they're socialist. They really don't. They say, you're seeing things. You're seeing socialists behind every rock, like you used to see communists behind every rock back in the day, right? They used to complain about the Republicans there. But when you see people like Ocasio-Cortez and you see Tlaib and you see all these people and they are outright socialists, when you see Bernie Sanders, who is an avowed socialist running for president and he's winning the primaries, ladies and gentlemen, they're a socialist party. Maybe not everybody in that party is socialist. Maybe not everybody at home is socialist. But they're socialists. And they are taking that party towards socialism. That's not just a different boat on the same river. That is a completely different boat in a completely different river. Right? So we have some big things going on here. Why is the press not doing that story? Are they really socialists? Why are we not seeing stories about Bernie? You know, Bernie honeymooned in the Soviet Union when we were in the Cold War. That would be a pretty big story, don't you think? I think that'd be a pretty big story, but not a word. Instead, we just like Bernie. We're going to push Bernie. So I find that interesting. So politically speaking, the impeachment is over. And how do we like a guy that a lot of us supported for president a couple years ago, Mitt Romney? What the heck happened to Mitt Romney? Now, I know when he ran for president, I thought he was a better choice than President Obama. I thought he would have been a better president. We would have maybe righted the boat of America a little sooner, got our economy back on the right footing, maybe straightened out some of it, slowed this socialism down. I really thought he was going to do that. I mean, that's who we had to choose from back then in that election. We had Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, and we saw what Obama did. And now we have Mitt Romney, and he seemed to be a conservative guy. Though a lot of people tried to warn us, you know, he was really a liberal in Massachusetts, and now he's saying he's conservative, but he was a better choice than another term of Barack Obama. That's what I believed. And I supported this guy. Well, since then, he has acquitted himself in such a way that I don't know what to make out of this guy, other than I can never believe another word that comes out of his mouth. I am so glad he did not win for president. And that sounds, you know, self-defeating, because if he had won, we would have had, you know, better time than when we had Barack Obama there. But it's interesting to me in that here he is turning around and voting to convict the president on the one charge of the two made-up charges, because he said his religion demanded him to do that. Now, the people on the left are jumping up and down. They want him on every show. He's the greatest guy in the world. It's a bipartisan impeachment because you got one Republican to vote for it. How about if anybody else came out and said they had to do it because their religion told them to do it? Do you think the media would like that? I think we should save the babies because God tells me we should save the babies. They would go crazy on you. But because it was against a Republican, suddenly he has honor. He has dignity. He has strength. He's the greatest character in the world. What a great guy. I think... I don't know what's in his head that his religion told him he had to vote for impeachment because that was right. All I know is when you look at the facts of the case, and I was not in the Senate chamber. I was not there for the whole thing sitting there. I've been watching this go along, and I knew this was all made up. This was all nonsense. This was a railroad job. How Mitt Romney could not sit there, and even if he hates Trump as much as it seems he really does, as jealous as he is of Trump, as maybe he's disgusted with Trump's tweeting. Maybe he is. Lots of people are. But to look at all of that and then have an opportunity, not just for his own ego, but for the country, for the history of the United States at a moment when our country needed strength to put this hoax aside, so that this doesn't happen again to anybody, Republican or Democrat. What happened here will destroy our nation. For him to not sit back and see that and to allow his whatever it was in his personality to say, I'm going to vote for conviction on this, even though it's crystal clear this was a hoax. Now, he only voted for one, the second charge of obstructing Congress, which is a bogus charge. There's no such thing. When you assert your rights, you can't be held, you can't be impeached for asserting your rights. But they did it anyway. And Mitt voted, he voted no on that one, right? So what's he trying to show, that he's level-headed? Now, he really thought this through? No, he wanted to vote against Trump. I think he wants something else. I think he's looking down the road, because I can't imagine the people in Utah, which are kind of conservative crowd out there. You people in Utah, right? You're listening here too. I know. I get your tweets. You're kind of conservative bunch out there. Is this really what you wanted from your senator? You wanted him to be bamboozled by these lies? You wanted Adam Schiff to convince him of things? Nancy Pelosi to make it seem as though these lies were real? Is that what you wanted out of your senator? To basically go against not just the party. I'm not saying you stand with the party just to stand with the party. You stand with history, and you stand with our republic, and you stand with our founders, and you stand with the future for our children and our families to come after us when you see such blatant lies and nonsense and a political impeachment, and you say no. You don't vote yes because your feelings were hurt by the guy who's going to benefit from it. You don't vote against your party because you want to be seen as bigger. Maybe you want a news job when you're done. Maybe you want to get out, because I can't imagine the people in Utah are really happy with what he did. Maybe he doesn't really like living in Utah. Maybe he figures, eh, go back to Washington maybe and get a nice anchor job on WNBC or whatever the hell it is down there, MSNBC or one of them liberal stations. Maybe that's what he really wanted to do. I don't know. But I know I was disgusted with him doing that, only because it's such a blatant setup that they did to Trump. You know, how many times can I say it? If he actually did bad things, I'd be the first one to say he gotta go. He didn't. They made this up. And if you cannot see that, if you can't see the facts for what they are here, then you're lost too. And we're in a lot of trouble. All right, we're moving close to the end here. The State of the Union address, I thought, was great. You know, every year we have our presidents come up and they tell us, you know, the state of our union, and tell us where we are, where we're going. Well, this particular State of the Union was masterfully done. And I'm not, you know, some people fall over themselves and say Trump's really a great speech giver. He's got a unique way of delivering his point of view. He is funny. He is off the cuff. And I do like that. He is genuine, no doubt about it. But I didn't think he was great. I thought Ronald Reagan's speeches were unbelievable, right? Ronald Reagan was a tremendous speechmaker. But I like Trump's speeches. But this particular State of the Union address, I thought was uplifting. I thought it was filled with all kinds of good news for everybody in our country. I thought it was really great. We are in a better place. We're moving forward. You know, I thought it was wonderful. And probably one of the most moving moments of all was when he presented the Presidential Medal of Freedom to the great Rush Limbaugh. Now, for a lot of us who are blessed to have a microphone to talk, who have an opportunity to be on any station anywhere in the world and give our opinions and talk about what we see in the world and what we think is important, there's no doubt that you have got to look to Rush Limbaugh as one of the greats of this industry. I remember starting listening to Rush in 1988, right, when he came to the New York area from California, had his nationwide show for the first time. I remember the first moment his show came on in August. It was summertime at 12 o'clock, and I was listening to talk radio working in my backyard, and the radio, and our new host, the show, the Rush Limbaugh Show, and you heard that music, you know, dump, dump, da, 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 going to Ohio by whatever band that is. And I said, this is, and by the end of that first show, I told my wife, I said, Kathleen, this guy was great. He was funny. It was uplifting. He was, he's a conservative guy. It was really great. And I just thought getting that medal was fantastic. And we all here at America Out Loud, I know we want to wish Rush the best, that he has good luck in fighting this terrible disease of cancer, and how many people out there in our audience today are fighting cancer today. So it's not something people don't know about. Cancer has touched everybody's family in one way or another. And now it's touched our radio family. We have Rush is going to be fighting for his life. I think it's a very difficult thing for his family. But we all want to wish him the best of luck and prayers for the future. And I would like to personally say, Rush, thanks for all the hours and hours and hours of listening. You helped me to see who I was as a conservative, and I appreciate that. So for everybody here at Chasing Justice, I want to thank you all for listening here to me. I hope in a very small way I can help you figure out who you are. We'll be back again very shortly for another episode of Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.